We've had a wonderful meeting this past weekend at the Big Sandy Fellowship meeting. I would like to ask you to turn to the first chapter of 1 Corinthians. I'd like to read a little. For it is written, verse 19, 1 Corinthians 1 and 19. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and will bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this world? Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? For after that in the wisdom of God, the world by wisdom knew not God. It pleased God by the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. For the Jews require a sign, and the Greeks seek after wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, unto the Jews a stumbling block, and unto the Greeks foolishness. But unto them which are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God, and the wisdom of God. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men. And the weakness of God is stronger than men. For ye see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise. And God hath chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty, and base things of the world, and things which are despised hath God chosen, yea, and things which are not, to bring to naught things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence. Now, I'll tell you something. The Apostle Paul introduced, well, he didn't introduce it, God introduced it. But when Paul wrote that down, he, in just a few short verses, helped to summarize how God operates.
Right.
God does not do things the way that you think they ought to be done. His foolishness is wiser than any wisdom that men has, and his weakness is stronger than all the strength that man could muster. And I want to say this. God is in the habit of using small, insignificant, foolish, weak things to bring about his purpose. And I want to go through some of these pretty quick. And then I want to get to some bigger ones. But I want us to think about how God started this out when, it didn't start it here. There's countless numbers of examples in the scriptures. I want to highlight just a few. You remember that old man named Abraham. Y'all remember Abraham? God gave him a promise and said, I'm going to make a covenant, and you are going to be the object of that covenant, thee and thy seed after thee, all of your family, all your children. And of them, there's going to come one that's going to deliver them. But he says, And he was an aged man when God made this promise to him. He was 90 years old. 90. And God said, you're going to have a son. And then, you know, he had a visitor. God, those three men come to him, right? And he said, you're going to have a son. And Sarah laughed, didn't she? Because she was 80. 80-year-old woman. Now, my mama's 89. If that'll give you a little bit of perspective. My mama's 89 right now. God told her, told Abraham, when he was 90, that he was going to father a child and that Sarah would have a child, would conceive a child by him. And she laughed. Because why did she laugh? Because that's not possible by human perspectives, is it? It's not possible. But do you know what happened? God waited 10 years. But you know, to make the miracle and the power of God even more incredible. And Abraham, at 100 years old, and Sarah at 90, she has a child. My mom's still got a year to go. And she's in a nursing home. And God brought about what he said by the most unlikely of character and the most unlikely of ways. Unlikely. By the world's standards. But God, remember, uses the weak things of the world to bring to naught the things that are, and the foolish things to confound the mighty. You see, Sarah thought that she was going to help God, and so, you know that story. If you don't, go read it, because it's compelling. Now, I want to also say, I got to go through these pretty quick. Joseph, y'all remember Joseph, one of the 12 sons of, you know, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. One of Jacob's 12 sons, and from him came the 12 tribes of Israel. And Joseph, y'all remember, was the youngest, right? Or one of the youngest. I think he was the youngest. And all the other, he was a dreamer. And he had dreams, and I hadn't read this in a while, but I tell you, he had dreams, and his father loved him, and his mama made him a coat of many colors. And his brothers were jealous of him. And you know why they were jealous? Because in Joseph's dreams, he dreamed that, there was 12 sheaves out there and my sheaves ate up all of yours. And a lot of these different things. He said, I had a dream about stars, Daddy. And all the stars, they did obeisance to me. And I tell you, that his brothers got jealous, didn't they? And so what they did was they put him, they were going to kill him. But one of the brothers said, let's not kill him. Let's just dig a hole and put him in there. And then take back some bloody garments and say that some animal, a tiger or something, lion got him. And let's just leave him out here. Let's not kill him. Well, you know what happened. He became the man second in command in Egypt, second only to Pharaoh. And he blessed them, and that's when all of the Jacob and all his other sons came down to Egypt, and he was the second man in charge, and he fed them. And they became a great nation in Egypt. But his brothers put him in a hole. They thought they had done away with him. God had different purpose for him. Had a different purpose for Joseph. Then I want to talk about, I'm going to hit these just in a highlight. Y'all go read about Joseph. It's an amazing thing, some of the things that are parallels between Joseph and Christ. Then let's look at Moses. Oh my goodness. Look at Moses. Y'all remember Pharaoh made it hard taskmasters. They told them to make bricks, and over the period process of some years, 400, around 400, and Moses was, Pharaoh put a decree because he got mad because this nation that's in his land has began to multiply and began to overrun them. And so he told all the midwives. Now the Bible don't cut any slack. It doesn't mince any words. And he says, Pharaoh said, I want you to tell all the midwives that when these pregnant women of the Jews are on their stool, that meant when they were birthing the babies, that you take you save the women alive, but you destroy, really, you kill the men babies, the boy babies, the male babies, you kill them. And there were two midwives that said that were afraid of God. They said, we're going to practice civil disobedience. We're going to go against the decree of the king because they feared God. That's what they didn't do it for any other reason other than they feared God, because it went against what God said. And so they hid them babies. And when Pharaoh came to him and said, why is it that you do this? And the midwives said, Pharaoh, these Jewish women ain't like the women of Egypt. The Jewish women are lively, and by the time we get down there, they already had them. And so then he told them, you kill all these babies. And you know what? What they done? They put Moses in an ark of bulrushes. Y'all know what that is? It's like a bunch of those things that grow like cattails or something, and they wove them together into a little basket. And they put that little baby in there. And can you imagine now a mama doing this, taking her baby, putting it in an ark, and setting it out into the river, the Nile River. Y'all know, or a river out in that region. Y'all know what they got in the Nile River? They got crocodiles in there. Can you imagine the faith that mama had? And he told her sister, Miriam, it ended up being, said, you stay here and you see what becomes of him. And she, while she was there, she kind of watched that thing, and it lighted over there around one of Pharaoh's daughters. And Pharaoh's daughter had compassion on that baby. And she took that baby up and raised him up for her own. And you know how awesome God is, that she saw the little girl there, and Moses' sister, and said, she said, do you want me to go get you one of the Jewish women to nurse it? And she said, yeah. And so she went and got his mama. I could not have conceived how God would have brought that to pass if I would have thought for 1,000 years. How God protected and God provided for that little child, because he had a purpose for him. His purpose for him was to lead out the children of Israel to do him service and to lead them out of the land of bondage. How wonderful is that? That's a foolish thing and a base thing of the world, isn't it, that God used. I would have never, in all wisdom that I could muster, would have never thought that God would have done it that way. You remember What happened? Who else they had? After they, Moses, God delivered them out by Moses' hand. And then they were going about in all the countries and regions around, heard how fearful it was to stand in their way. And they were coming up against the Jericho. Y'all remember that, don't you? How God came there and they sent spies into Jericho. And guess what? They lodged in a harlot's house. If y'all don't know what that is, come talk to me when service is over. I'll help you understand. And this, that harlot's name was Rahab. And Rahab hid those spies and she feared God. And she asked them if they would spare her for the things that she'd done and the kindness that she had shown unto them. And you know the story. If you don't, go read it. It's wonderful. And you'll be rejoicing and praising God when you get finished reading it. And I tell you that Rahab, even though she was a base thing and a foolish thing, and she was not mighty, but oh, my friends, I want you to remember that she is mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11, the hall of faith, right there with Abraham and Moses and Noah and all of those other great men of faith. She's mentioned in there, and she was a harlot. I tell you what, God doesn't do things and use people the way that I would use them or think. God, in His infinite mercy and wisdom, chose the foolish things of the world to bring to naught the things that are mighty. And do you know what happened to Jericho on that day? God, I would think since they were so great a people that they would have come against that with their own physical abilities. But no, God said, you don't do it that way. You walk around one time a day around the city, and you blow a trumpet, and you don't say a word, and then, don't blow a trumpet the first day. He said, you march around it every day, and on the seventh day, you march around it seven times, and after the seventh time, you blow a trumpet, and then everybody shouts, and God caused the walls of Jericho to come tumbling down. Oh, and they never lifted their hand up against. They didn't have to, did they? They didn't have to use their might to go about it. And I tell you what, God told Zerubbabel, when they were building the temple, rebuilding it, He said, not by power nor by might, but by my spirit, saith the Lord your God. I tell you what, it's not the way that God don't do it the way that we think it ought to be done. And I tell you, Brother Jerry also talked about Gideon. And you remember what happened to Gideon, don't you? Gideon was there, a man of God, and he was afraid. And he had great need to be afraid. He had a great reason to be afraid because the Midianite army had assembled in the valley down there, and they were about to come against and destroy them. And it was a whole host of the Midianites. And God said, all right, Gideon, I tell you what, I'm going to use you in a great way. And he said, I want you to choose some men. And Gideon got a bunch of men out there, and he said, nah, it's too many. He said, you tell them, and he gave them all the ones finally that that lap up water like a dog. You send them back, but the ones that bring it up to their mouth with that like this, instead of drinking it out of the pond, the ones that pull it up like this, those are the ones that you keep for me. And I think it ended up being 100, and 100 men to go out among this great army of the Midianites. And he says, you spread them all along the top. And you tell them, every man, don't take a pitcher. You take a lantern and a pitcher. And then you put a candle in it. And then you go all around there, and he said, when I tell you to give the signal, you break that pitcher and let your light shine, and you give a shout, and you say, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. And that's what they did in the middle of the night. Them 100 men, or 300, however many it was, it don't matter. It wasn't a whole army, and they didn't even have to fight. All they did was broke them pitchers, let their light shine. And I tell you what, you know how God destroyed the Midianites? They destroyed themselves because they were confused. I tell you what, that's not how I thought God would have done it. But He chose the foolish things of the world to confound the mighty. And I tell you something else. Y'all remember about Ruth, don't you? Y'all remember Ruth, don't you? How Ruth, she was a Moabitish woman, from a place of sin. Moab is always representative of sin. But you know who Ruth was? She went down and she married one of Naomi's boys. Naomi was a Jew. And then, because there was a famine in the land, and she left and went down and dwelt in Moab. I tell you, that's never a good place to go. I don't care what kind of famine there is. It's not good for you to go down, because if you do, you'll leave full, but you'll come back empty. And Ruth loved her mother-in-law so much, she came back with her into the Jewish land. And you know what happened? That old woman from Moab became the object of a great man's affection. And he loved her, took her into his house, and he redeemed. She was part of what was the whole redemption package. And you know Ruth? You know who Ruth was? It was David's great-grandmother, I believe. King David's great-grandmother. Speaking of David, let's talk about David for a minute. David. God said, the people wanted a king. God said, all right, I'll give you what you want. Sometimes God gives us what we want. He said, but you tell them people, Samuel, that they're going to smart for it. They're going to suffer for it. This king is going to take your children. He's going to take your money. He's going to take your lands in his service. So they chose a king, and they chose Saul, who was what? Head and shoulders above everybody else, because they were looking on the natural part, weren't they? But that wasn't God's man. Even though he was anointed king, that wasn't God's choice. That was the people's choice. Now, there came a time when God said, all right, he caused the evil spirit to come on Saul, because Saul disobeyed God. He disobeyed what God said. God said, I'm going to set me up a real king. And he said, you go, Samuel, you go down to Jesse's house. And you inquire. He said, the one whom you're going to anoint is the one that I'm telling you to anoint. And Jesse paraded all of his six sons around. And the first one, Samuel said, surely this is him. Do you know what God said? He said, don't look on the outward appearance. He said, this is not him. He said, don't look on the outward appearance, look on the heart. He said, I look on the heart. And then Jesse paraded all of his boys in front of Samuel. And Samuel said, there's none of these. He said, are you sure these are all your boys? Jesse said, no. He said, not all my boys. I got one. He's out in the pasture, keeping the sheep. Samuel said, we ain't going to sit down until he comes. He said, go fetch him. So they fetched him, and that was God's man. Overlooked by the world, right? Chose the base things, foolish things of the world to confound the mighty. And you know, David, something else about David, when he was just a young lad, young boy, wasn't really a mighty man, and had Goliath. out there in the middle of the valley, challenging the armies of Israel to produce somebody that could come and challenge him. Someone, anyone worthy or willing to come and challenge me, and whoever wins will then the loser will be the winner's servants. What did David do? What did Saul do? Saul said, "I'll tell you one thing, David, you crazy, but you're going to go." I'm talking to the kid. He said, "David, you crazy. You can't go down there and meet that giant. You're just a boy. And he's been a man of war since he was a boy." And he says, "You've got to take my sword and you got to take my armor." And David said, "I can't take your armor." He said, "I haven't proved it." Because in men's minds, if you're going to go against a giant, you better have some kind of defensive weapon, some kind of offensive weapon. And David said, "I don't know nothing about how to use a sword, and I never put any armor on, but I do know how to use one thing. I know how to use a sling." And so David, he met that giant down there, and he saw him afar off. And there was a little creek right there. And David bent down and he got 5 stones, put them in his bag, in his shepherd's bag. And he started running towards that giant. He didn't run away. He ran towards him. And he put that stone, that smooth stone, he put it in that sling. And I could see that little boy. You know how boys do. When I had a slingshot when I was little, and I put that slingshot, and I used to practice with that thing all the time. David had to use that sling to protect them sheep out there. David knew how to use that thing. He was real good with it. And old David started running towards this great giant. Some say he was 9.5 or 11 feet tall. That's big, ain't it? And old David, I could see him running, slinging that sling. And then when it got just right, he let her fly and it sunk deep into that giant's forehead right there and laid him out flat backward. And you know what David done? He took that giant's own sword and cut his head off. I know that's gory, ain't it? Read the Bible. It's got a lot of gore in it. God don't sugarcoat nothing. Slew the giant with what he knew how to use. He took the base things of the world. And you know, the giant mocked David all the time. He said, "Boy, what are you doing out here? You little thing. You poor little creature. I'm going to stomp you like an ant." David said, "Who are you to defy the very armies of God?" Oh, we come on. I could tell you about Esther. I don't have time to go into Esther. It's a great story. You ought to read it. The whole book. It's great. You think about how God had one little Jew girl deliver the whole nation. The apostles. John the Baptist. Boy, he walked around in a leather girdle with a coat of camel's hair. I mean, you talk about a strange looking character. And he ate locusts, bugs, and wild honey. Now, I've eaten wild honey. It's a strange thing to stick your hand up in a beehive and get honey, because you'll get stung. But that's what he ate. He ate locusts, bugs, and wild honey. Now that's a strange thing, isn't it? But you know, God chose him to prepare the way of the Lord. Or to make ready a people prepared by God. And I tell you what, he was a preacher of righteousness, wasn't he? His whole thing was repent and be baptized. And then he was an unlikely character, wasn't he? An unlikely character. And then we have the apostles. that were fishermen, unlearned men. They fished every day. They didn't know a whole lot about what was going on, did they? They got up, they baited their nets and took their nets out and come in, and some of them were despised. They were set at the receipt of custom. They were money, not money changers, but yeah, they were. They were money changers, some of them. People didn't like them. They were hated. The Jews hated them because they kind of worked for the government. They worked for the Romans. And they didn't like them. They were despised. And God said, follow me. And they dropped whatever they were doing and they followed him. That's a powerful voice, isn't it? Then they come on down and you see, I must hurry on, all of the apostles. I tell you, they weren't mighty, were they? They weren't knowledgeable, were they? They weren't the highest level of educated men, were they? They weren't the holy men of the day, were they? God didn't choose those people. He chose the baser sort of men to bring about His purposes and to preach His gospel. I think the reason why is because if they would have been great learned men, then people might think that they got that learning from men, but these men didn't get their learning from men. They got their learning from God.
Right.
Straight from the mouth of God. And real learned men do the same today. They do the same today. And then I want to talk specifically about three unlikely candidates and unlikely characters. John the Baptist. He's an unlikely candidate to be born again, isn't he? Because he's in his mother's womb. And and God touched him spiritually before he touched him and before he was able to be born into the world. Now that's unlikely, isn't it? That's unlikely that men would think that little baby be able to go to heaven. But I can tell you this, that God's power is not bound by birth. It's not bound by it doesn't have to wait until a child is born into the world for him to do his work. He did his work before John the Baptist ever saw the light of day. And I tell you what, he does the same with, I believe, every aborted baby. God's not like we are. He don't think like we think. And it doesn't use means the way that we think he does. I tell you, John the Baptist, an unlikely character, but God can reach you before you see the light of day. I tell you another unlikely candidate, Saul of Tarsus, wasn't it? Saul of Tarsus, yet breathing out threatenings for doing what we're doing today. I can just imagine how he was mocking and how he hated. I tell you, that man desired letters to go from Jerusalem all the way to Damascus. You know, that's about, I think it's about 120 miles. I mean, Saul just wasn't wanting to hurt the Christians that were in Jerusalem. He wanted to go out and have a campaign against Christianity itself. He wanted to do the same thing that the Crusades did. He wanted to go out into all the lands and all these other countries. That's what Saul wanted to do. His motive was to stamp out Christianity in the world. And God, well, he was on that way, and God struck him down on the road to Damascus, didn't he? And you know what happened? He called him to preach. That's not the way that I would think God would do it, but he done it that way. And Saul was an unlikely candidate to be born again, but that's exactly what God did on that road.
Right.
No man was preaching to him. No man, no preacher would have preached to Saul of Tarsus. Why? Because he would have cut, he would have caused him to be stoned to death, held, put him into prison, and drug him down there, and Paul, Saul would have done that. Man didn't want to talk to Saul. Ananias didn't want to talk to Saul, did he? He said, God told him, he said, he's a chosen vessel unto me. He said, God, that man's been putting up folks like me in prison. You want him to come into my house? God said, behold, he prayeth. And that changed Ananias' tune, didn't it? Ananias brought him into his house and called him brother. God don't do things. God don't use people the way that we think God or who God ought to use. As another unlikely character, I don't know his name. I don't guess anybody does now. He was hanging on a cross next to Jesus, wasn't he? An unlikely character. And he was justly on that cross. And he was railing against Jesus. He's an unlikely character to be born again, isn't he? He's an unlikely candidate to have the mercy of God shed upon him as he's hanging on that cross for being a thief. And he's mocking Jesus, railing against him, still. And he's up there with him. But something happened to that man. He wasn't baptized. No preacher preached to him. I don't find where Jesus tried to get him converted. Jesus don't try to convert nobody. I don't guess Jesus tries to do anything. He just does it. Something happened to him and he said, Lord, remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom. And Jesus says, you're going to be with me today in paradise. Well, I tell you, God don't do it the way that we think it ought to be done. In those three examples, we've got such a great blessing to know that God's power reaches from before natural birth all the way up until sure death. Sure death. Unlikely characters. I want to tell you about the most unlikely character of them all. He was born to a Jew girl named Mary. When he was born, they laid him in the feeding trough, an animal feeding trough. Those things are nasty. The world had no place for him. There was no room for him in the inn. Put him in a manger. From his very birth, men tried to kill him, didn't they? The Bible says there was no form or comeliness about him that men would choose him. He looked like everybody else. Oh, but the Jews thought they were going to get this great warrior, didn't they? Riding in on a white horse. God didn't do it the way they thought. They couldn't believe that God would send one coming on a colt full of an ass. Bible says he was despised and rejected of men. I tell you, when Jesus was crucified And they had that mock trial. And he rode into Jerusalem on that colt, the foal of an ass. People said, "Hosanna in the highest." That's wonderful, isn't it? I imagine some of those same people were there and hollered out at his mock trial, "Crucify him, crucify him." Men mocked him. They put a crown, men put a crown of thorns on his head, but God crowned him with glory and honor. Men put a scepter of a reed in his hand, mocking him being king. God put a scepter of righteousness in his hand. Men put a scarlet purple robe on him. The Bible says his vesture was dipped in blood. He made it red for real. Men spit upon him. God said, "This is my beloved son, into whom I'm well pleased." Men put him on a cross, and then they put him in a tomb. But God raised him up out of that tomb. You know, whatever man does, God undoes. Ain't that good? I like that, don't you? Whatever man tried to do to Christ, God overruled it by his power. And I tell you this, that when he died on that cross, Satan thought he had won the victory, didn't he? But oh, how in the world could life come from death? But it did. That's a strange way, an unlikely way that you would think that we would be able to have life. Don't you think that's strange? Don't you think it's unlikely that through death we would have life? But oh, that's what happened.
Right.
That's what happened when God, it says in Hebrews chapter 2, it says, and again in 13, 2 and 13, "And again I will put my trust in him, and again behold I am the children which God hath given me. For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself likewise took part of the same, that through death he might destroy him that had the power of death, that is the devil." You know the devil ain't got power over death. I've heard people quote that wrong. They say that he had the power over death. The only one that's got power over death is Jesus.
Right.
Satan has the power of death. He is death. And Jesus used that thing to vanquish him. That's amazing. How God would, by his death, bring me life. But that's not the only, not only that, Satan thought he had done away with him, but God used that thing which they, all the men and all the people thought, "We're going to be rid of this man now." And God used that to exalt him. You know, men mocked him. And they put him in the ground, and God highly exalted him. Men spit upon him and mocked him. God highly exalted him. That means raised him up. And he sits on the right hand of the throne of the majesty today. I want to read this, and I'll close. Thank you. chapter 9 and 11 of Hebrews. But Christ being come, an high priest of good things to come by a greater and a more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is to say, not of this building. Neither by the blood of goats and calves, but by his own blood he entered in once in the holy place, having obtained eternal redemption for us. Strange that we would be redeemed by the death of one. For if the blood of bulls and goats and the ashes of an heifer, sprinkling the unclean, sanctifieth to the purifying of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God, purge your conscience from dead works to serve the living God? And for this cause he is a mediator of the New Testament, that by means of death, for the redemption of the transgressions that were under the first testament, that be the law of sin and death, they which are called might receive the promise of eternal inheritance. For where a testament is, there must also of necessity be the death of the testator. The song that we sang, how deep the Father's love, his dying breath hath brought me life, and I know that it is finished. How wonderful that we get life from death. Isn't that strange? But God has chosen the weak things of the world to confound the mighty. He don't do things the way that we think. Let me ask you a question. Do you think you're insignificant? If you do, God's probably got something for you to do. Pray that God would show you what that is. Let's be a blessing to someone this week, and don't despise the day of small things. Because you're small. God loves you. Don't ever think that you're not, can't be of service to Him, because you're not mighty, or you're not noble, or you're not rich, or you're not powerful. God don't do things the way that we think. May the Lord bless you, is my prayer.